A recent magazine article by the Wisconsin Counties Association says, quote, while heroin use continues to remain in focus for Wisconsin's law enforcement and treatment services, meth has quickly surged to a point where the number of cases, arrests, and charges are on par with heroin. Today, we're going to talk about meth. Hello, and welcome to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther, president of Wheeler Reports. Today, we're going to talk about methamphetamine. Today, I'm joined by Rose Baer, the Criminal Justice Collaborating Council Coordinator in Chippewa Falls. Welcome, Rose.
Hi, thanks, Gwen. I'm glad to be part of this discussion today.
And Justin. Justin is in a treatment program, and he's here to tell us about his program and what got him to where he is. Welcome, Justin.
Hello, Gwen. Thanks for having me.
So, Rose, let's start with you. What is the Criminal Justice Collaborating Council, and what does it do?
Sure. The Criminal Justice Collaborating Council is a group that is made up of the top decision makers and stakeholders in the criminal justice system, and also may include some community members. As an example, in Chippewa County, our council membership includes our judge, county administrator, county board members, sheriff, chiefs of police, district attorney, defense counsel. We have about 23 members that sit on our, what I like to call CJCC for short. And what we do is the collaborating council really brings everyone to the table, and it provides an opportunity to work together to tackle system problems. It helps us to break down those silos that maybe individual departments might not be able to do in their traditional manner, such as a prosecutor talking with defense counsel about the way that system outcome is working. So in Chippewa, the CJCC, what we do is we really assess the entire system and then make necessary changes to improve the system outcomes. And we do that through not only our CJCC, but we have an evidence-based policy team and also several other work groups targeting those issues.
Excellent. So, Justin, I first learned about you when I was talking to the people who did an interview for the Wisconsin Counties Association magazine. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a recovering addict, both methamphetamine and heroin. I was given the opportunity to be a participant in the Chippewa County Recovery Program, and it essentially changed my life. I was able to beat addiction with the help of numerous people that are involved in that program, which is wonderful.
You said you're recovering from both heroin and methamphetamine. And one of the things that I learned from the article in the county's magazine is that a number of people start using heroin and then change over to methamphetamine. What can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think in this area, I mean, for me, it was an availability issue, and that's what was, methamphetamine as of late has really increased in Chippewa County. I was just reading some numbers the other day, as a matter of fact, on how the caseload is substantially greater than it was last year in Chippewa County. And I think just the availability in itself, to get the drug itself is so prominent here that it just becomes one of those things where I was an addict addicted to anything, and I wanted anything that I could get my hands on, and that's what I turned to.
All right. So, Rose, Justin just alluded to the fact that methamphetamine is increasing in the area, and on the western side of the state, it's absolutely had an explosion. What are you seeing in your community?
It really has. And just for example, what we're seeing, we've been trying to track some statistics because it really has inundated every department that we have here in Chippewa County. And I know everywhere I go in the state, it's similar conversation up in this northern region. We've really seen one of the departments, and one of the statistics that's pretty overwhelming is within our Department of Human Services. So in 2014, we had approximately 10 out-of-home meth-related placements. And at the end of 2017, we had seen a significant increase from 10 to 159 out-of-home child protection placement cases related to methamphetamine. So that's just one, staggering statistic of what we're seeing, but it really has affected you know, families, community, increase in crime, increase in the district attorney's case felony filings, and also just seeing the types of individuals with these significant addiction and mental health issues coming into our jails and trying to serve them when they're placed in jail, that type of thing.
So, you know, talk about, Rose, a little bit about how much of your caseload used to be dealing with methamphetamine issues versus how much of it is now are you dealing with different methamphetamine issues?
Well, here's the difficult part to answer that question is we really didn't start tracking statistics very closely in Chippewa County until our CJCC was formed in 2012. So back in about 2013-14, we really started tracking, you know, what types of cases are coming into the jail and what types of issues they have. Same with the child welfare piece. So I really can't speak to what the difference is. I can tell you that in our recovery court, which is, we just renamed that from drug court to recovery court, so it's a drug court type model. We used to be alcohol was our number one drug of choice within that court, and over the last 3 years, that switched to methamphetamine being the primary drug of choice of all of our participants. So that's the type of statistics that we're looking in the way that we see things changing.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk some more about meth and what people don't know.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense, citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
So, Justin, you know, as a reporter, I've heard a lot about opioids in the past few years, and we have not heard as much statewide about meth. What do you think people need to know about this drug?
Well, in my experience, methamphetamine takes everything from you, including, you know, financial relationships, your self-worth, self-confidence. It depletes you of anything you've ever known growing up in your life. It just takes a hold, and it's the only thing that I was thinking that I would think about was if I didn't have it, how I was going to get it. And once I got it, the process started all over again. It's just a vicious circle.
So how is heroin different than meth then? I mean, other than the fact that one is supposed to depress your system and one is supposed to accelerate your system, what's the difference between the two? And why is one more or less addictive? Or, I mean, what has been your experience with that?
In my experience, the opioids, also known as heroin, is more of a physical need. If I didn't have it, my body craved it more, as far as the physical end of it, sweating, diarrhea, you know, things like that, where if I didn't have it, it was going to physically affect me. I couldn't even get out of bed or get, you know, be motivated. Whereas methamphetamine is such a stimulant that it's still in the same sense. It's not as physically depleting on the body. I think it's more of a mental thing where, it affects you mentally and keeps you going at a faster pace and less physical, I guess it was for me, experience-wise.
So, Rose, when these people are coming into the system, whether they're just having their first time in court or they're reporting to jail, what kinds of treatments are started for people who come in with methamphetamine issues?
Well, I think that's been the challenge. I think at this point, a lot of counties, especially in that front end of the system, don't have resources available that we need. I know Chippewa County and a few other counties that are part of an evidence-based decision-making initiative with the National Institute of Corrections and the state have really been working on treatment and diversion options, and the state has also been working on front-end treatment and diversion options for these individuals. I know in speaking with several people who have been put in jail with addiction, they've indicated that there really aren't a lot of services in jail to help meet the needs that they have for mental health, you know, even the physical withdrawal from meth and heroin, actually. So I think counties are working on this. I know Chippewa County, we are working on more front-end interventions, really seeking treatment, seeking those services. doing assessments way earlier in the process and trying to divert individuals from the system.
So once you have someone into your system and you've gotten them some type of treatment, whether it's a treatment in instead of incarceration or they're getting treatment while they're incarceration, what happens when they're done with serving their time or they're done with the program? Are you still providing services to them? Are you still following up and helping them?
We are, depending on which program they're in. So, for instance, our recovery court program, which is really a program that's at the far end of the system. Individuals in recovery court are people who, if they don't successfully complete that program, may be looking at lengthy jail or prison stays. So they're a little farther into the system. In our recovery court, we actually are open to individuals coming back if they need help or they need services. They need to be referred for services. It's an open door policy for those. Even, for instance, with Justin, when he was out of recovery court and finished, he came back to get some extra support and services, and we tried to help him do that. Again, in our county, one of our struggles is with those ongoing aftercare services. We do have what is now called comprehensive community services, which we are able to hook people up with and that qualify to get those aftercare and support services when they're finished with our programs.
So, Justin, when you went into the system and started getting help, what did they do well for you, and what things were they really lacking that you really wish they had known you needed?
You know, for me, I was so beat down when I got in there that I was just ready to take anything that was available. And if I'm being honest, there really isn't nothing that recovery court team didn't do for me that if I needed help. I think in my experience, the most important aspect would be when someone is incarcerated and they want to get help and they're looking at options that they can go to. It's getting better, but it's not right. Because I think it's the most important time to grab somebody maybe right then and there is when they're being incarcerated and they're maybe staring at a prison sentence or a lengthy jail sentence, or they are just finally ready to surrender and try to get some help. Other than that, like Rose touched on, I needed some help after I was out of recovery court program, and I came back and they were right there willing to help in any way they could, and you know, never turned me away. So it's really, I think the program they have set up now is wonderful. I mean, if a person wants to change, it's available there to change.
So since you've been out of the program, or since you've moved into the next phases of the program, Justin, I read that you're trying to help mentor and you're trying to help other people who are going into the program or who are having problems with addictions and drugs. What kinds of things are you doing in your community?
I'm a firm believer in, you know, what I found was freely given to me. So I am very adamant about giving back. I do a lot of things like, the talk show today that we're doing, you know, is one of those things where if maybe I can reach out and someone hears something that I might say, or, I tend to go back into recovery court on occasion and poke my head in and sit in on a session and see how everybody's doing, or maybe I can be some help to them with questions, or, I go to anything that I can do to give back. I'm almost, if I have my time's available, I will give it.
So I think in the past, I don't know, maybe 6, possibly 8 years, the stigmatism that comes with heroin use, you know, people used to think that heroin use was something that was just for people who were on the streets. And then they started finding out that it's in the suburbs and it's in families and it's in people are having problems with it. What are the stigmatisms that come with meth? What don't people know? And how do you identify people who are having problems with meth?
It has no discrimination. That I do know. There's no... I have ran across many walks of life who have been addicts, and a lot of, you know, society would be surprised by that, but it has no discrimination. And, you know, the signs of it usually are, of sleep, fidgety, if people are really fidgety all the time, trade on one, project for too long, you know, for instance, saying mowing your lawn or something, and you're doing it for 6 hours on end or something, when you know it only takes a half an hour, you know, that kind of stuff. It's usually pretty apparent, especially me with my experience. I'm an addict, so I can usually pick off right away who, if somebody is using or not. And not in all cases is like that, though. There are some, you know, and like you said, touched on with suburban families where, you know, meth is being used, but they're not aware. You know, people aren't aware of really what's going on in their community, or if their children are actually involved in it and they don't know about it because they don't know the signs. So I think education is a big one, too.
And Rose, what do you think people need to know about meth and being able to identify it or help people who are struggling with it?
Well, I think Justin hit it on the head in that actually we've been doing meth town hall meetings here for the past couple of years. We've done about 7 just to educate the community and get them involved and make them more aware. A lot of people are not aware of the significance of what the meth epidemic has done with us. However, I believe that in these town hall meetings, most people were, when asked if they knew somebody who had used meth or had been affected by meth in any way, raise their hand. So all of us, I think, are only about 1 or 2 people away from knowing somebody who's been affected by this drug. I think it's really the community awareness that it is here. I think people need to know it's in our communities and to provide that education and that it isn't discriminating. It really isn't. There's been people in high offices or in positions that have come, you know, to say they know somebody on meth or their relative is been affected by meth. So it's really hitting on that. It really isn't discriminating. It's not the traditional face of meth that we see in posters anymore, you know, and it can be with your teeth missing and the sores and lesions on your face. But there's also individuals who are using meth that don't appear with those physical symptoms.
So, you know, I'm going to prove just how naive I am on drugs right now, but, you know, Can either of you talk about, you know, what the cost is for heroin versus what's the cost for meth? I mean, can a high school kid with a part-time job afford to buy heroin? Can they afford to buy meth? I mean, what's the price difference there?
Can we answer that one, Justin?
Yeah. In my experience, they're both pretty equal as far as affordability-wise, and they're both equal in being able to obtain. They're both very prevalent in the community. And yes, absolutely. A high school student or, you know, a young college student can very easily have a part-time job and at the beginning definitely afford a habit like that. It's if they stick with it, that's, you know, it'll become an issue of being able to financially support it and probably turn to crime, you know, as I did, to support it.
That's scary. So one last question before we go to our next commercial. With heroin, there is an increasing need for more heroin each time you dose because your body starts to get used to it. Is that something that happens with meth?
In my experience, yes. The tolerance can go up. You know, unfortunately, with either of them, you don't really know what's in the drug, and that's the dangerous part. But especially with methamphetamine, because they are making it with, I mean, literally all kinds of chemicals. The old saying is that you can usually open underneath your sink and find the chemicals to make it. And you really don't know what you're putting into your body, and that's the scary part. But yes, increased tolerance on both is generally what happens.
Okay.
And that's what I've heard too, Gwen, is that each time a person uses meth, it takes more and more every additional time to get that same high with meth. And what we're seeing, the trends in the area, is that they're even starting to lace what you would think would be THC. So when people are buying THC, it could be laced with some methamphetamine in there, so that people selling that THC are getting somebody hooked on meth, wanting them to come back for more. So, Justin, what he said about you just don't know what you're getting, that also goes for the other drugs that are out there, and THC in particular.
Well, that's scary. And I know that the Department of Health Services here just announced last week that they have had their first death attributed to synthetic marijuana. So it's kind of scary what they're mixing all these drugs with. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about where the meth is coming from.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
So, not so long ago, I remember the Wisconsin legislature taking action to get Sudafed from where you could just buy it regular in the store to now having to go to the pharmacist and having to sign for it and trying to control the ability of there to be meth labs in Wisconsin. But now there seems to be a resurgence of meth coming back. So where is it coming from, Rose?
Well, from all the information that I've read and been told, and one of those was the statewide study of the methamphetamine in Wisconsin report, that indicated that the meth resurgence expanded beginning in 2011 to 15, and it really increased about 250 to 300%. They based this all on the analysis of the meth-related cases. And I think what I've been hearing is a growth in the international production and the larger producers. I've seen Mexican cartel in some of these reports trafficking meth into Wisconsin is ultimately one of the major causes for that resurgence. I believe I read in another article from, it might have been the Wisconsin County Association, that the Drug Enforcement Administration estimated that about 90 to 95% of Wisconsin's meth is actually imported. So I think a lot of the measures that they took quite a few years ago helped reduce the laboratories within our state, but now that meth is increased and the larger producers is coming in. I know in Chippewa County, we're up here in the midwestern region of Wisconsin up here, and we have belt lines that go through our area to the Twin Cities, Minneapolis metropolitan area. And so when our drug task force talks about this, they often cite the fact that a lot of that is coming from the Chicago Twin Cities area once it gets into the state.
Well, I know recently I spoke with the chief of police for the city of Wausau, and he said meth is still more on the western part of the state, more towards the cities, and heroin, they're still having more problems with southern and eastern Wisconsin, but that Wausau is actually starting to see problems with both of them. So it seems like both heroin and meth are moving systematically across the state, and Wausau's in the middle of both right now. So that's kind of scary to think that that we're dealing with both of these on two different fronts.
It is scary, and we've been tracking as well in our system, and we are seeing heroin trickling in more and more into our region also, more than we had previously.
So, Justin, if you could speak to one person out there who's having a problem with either heroin or meth and is maybe just getting ready to start getting some help, what would you want them to know?
It might not seem like it right now, and it seems like, you know, your life is crashing down, and it probably is, but there is hope. There's hope out there. I mean, you can recover. You don't have to live a life like that. And it's, for me, I have been given more opportunities and things that beyond my wildest dreams that I never thought I would be able to obtain.
Well, that's great news, Justin. I'm glad to hear that you're doing better. And I'm glad to hear that you found some people who are going to help you with this. Rose, you know, I just want to follow up and find out from you what you think we can do what can the legislature do? What can communities do? What can we do to help combat this issue?
I wish I had the magic ball to answer that question right now, but I think what has been successful or what is starting to be is really just first thing is I think we as a community need to remember that people suffering from addiction did not wake up choosing this for themselves. And it could be anybody's mother, sister, brother, uncle, cousin, you know, so we need to keep that in mind. And I think we need to keep in the forefront that this is not just a system problem. It needs to be a community campaign. We as a community need to step up to help fight this epidemic. As far as legislation, what I've been talking to my legislators about is really that funding for treatment on the front end and that prevention piece of this. I think, you know, meth and heroin addiction continue to be the epidemic that we're talking about in Wisconsin, but until the root cause of the addiction is addressed and treated, it's going to continue to be something else. So Justin, I believe, is one that when I interviewed him said we can't arrest our way out of the problem.
That's a great line.
Yeah, I think that is really, it's hard as a community member that doesn't know anything about this, looking at crime and looking at increased crime, and if you're affected as a victim and thinking people just need to be locked up, we just need to lock them up. And that is the case for some people, but if we're locking them up and not providing the correct services and the correct programming, it's not going to change things, because they're just going to get back out and move back next to you in the community again. So I know that's a long answer to your question, but I really think that the treatment, the prevention piece of it, and providing the right types of programs on the front end is hopefully going to make an impact.
Well, I want to thank you both. You know, the drugs that are out there right now are really kind of scary. It's not just meth. It's not just heroin. It's not just marijuana. These things are being laced with other things. And I don't think, especially young people or people who are looking for something at a low point in their life, understand just how quickly you can become addicted to drugs and just how quickly they can destroy your life and your family. And thank you both for taking the time to speak with us today. That's the end of today's podcast. I want to thank the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and the Wisconsin Counties Association for working with me on this podcast. I would like to encourage everyone to go out and read this month's Wisconsin Counties Association magazine. It talks a lot about meth. It does an excellent interview with you, Justin, and it talks about some things that we need to know. And I want to thank Jackie Johnson for doing our sound editing. Make sure you catch us on Community Radio. We are on Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3, Sun Prairie Radio 103.5. Thank you both again, Rose and Justin. It's been great having you on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Quinn.